You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Leonard's on vacation. I'm Elliot Forrest. Lawrence Wright's Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Looming Tower, Al-Qaeda and the Road to 9/11, was a painstaking exploration of the Islamic radicalism that led to the World Trade Center bombings in 2001. Wright went on to develop an off-Broadway one-man show called My Trip to Al-Qaeda, based on his research. The show has now spawned a documentary by the same name, directed by Alex Gibney. It airs tonight at 9 o'clock on HBO. Lawrence Wright, it is a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you, Elliot. It's great to be here.
I enjoyed the documentary of your one-man show. I enjoyed it a great deal. It was both entertaining and enlightening, if your journey can be called entertaining, and it was. What led you on this particular path to really want to get inside Al-Qaeda?
Well, I had lived in the Arab world. I taught as a young man for 2 years at the American University in Cairo. So I had some experience there. I spoke some Arabic. I had a lot of friends and a lot of ties. And then I was a co-writer of a movie called The Siege in 1998, which in some creepy ways sort of prefigured the events of 9/11. So those two things together, you know, my previous experience and also having written that movie, it provoked my interest in trying to find out what really happened.
What was the reaction in the Arab world to that movie, The Siege?
Well, it was banned when it first came out. I mean, you couldn't see it for a long time. Most of the Arabs that I know that have seen it really like it because it has an Arab-American hero in it. Tony Shalhoub is an Arab-American playing an Arab-American FBI agent. The problem with that movie was that there had been a lot of movies before that had depicted stereotypical Arab terrorists. And there was a campaign ready to go for the next movie that had an Arab terrorist in it. And mine was in the dock.
You just happened to be next.
Yes, that's true. And people, you know, it reminds me a little of the mosque controversy now. This was the first time when Islam became a real issue in public debate. There were people picketing the theaters and so on. It was a very difficult period of time for me.
And you actually have a little guilt that you talk about for some real bombings that happened based on that.
Well, after the trailers came out in August of 1998, there was a bombing in Cape Town, South Africa, at a Planet Hollywood. And two people were killed and a little girl lost her leg. And the people that did the bombing, an Islamist splinter group, said that they did it because of the trailers that were appearing for The Siege at that time. It was very upsetting.
There's a major point in the documentary, in the one-man show that you did, and you make this point by playing this section from The Siege. I'd like to play that if I could, but set it up for us because you wrote this dialogue what year?
Well, the movie came out in 1998, and I think I started writing The Siege probably 2 years prior to that. So somewhere along the line, that and also Ed Zwick and his writing partner had their hands on it too. So I can't tell you exactly what year it was, but it was before the embassy bombings in 98. Actually, right when the trailer came out is when Al-Qaeda began its attack on America.
And so, well before, obviously, the other attacks on America in 2001.
Yeah, it prefigured those things in a really creepy way. But the question that the movie asks is what would happen if terrorism came to our shores, as it already had in France and England, not even to mention Israel. You know, there were terrorist attacks in many places in Europe. And the question simply was, how would we behave? What would happen to our civil liberties? How would we react to such events? That's what The Siege asks.
And let's hear this response from the film. This is Denzel Washington.
What if what they really want is for us to herd children in the stadiums like we're doing and put soldiers on the street and have Americans looking over their shoulders, bend the law, shred the Constitution just a little bit? Because if we torture him, General, we do that and everything that we have bled and fought and died for is over. And they've won.
When we come back to this, when you come back to this line time and time again, as things have happened since then, mm-hmm. 1998, I mean, you must be happy to a certain extent that you were right, but it must appall you that you were so right.
You know, people say it was prophetic, but actually wasn't, in since I simply looked at how other people behaved, how other societies reacted, and I assumed that we wouldn't be any different. What was creepy about it to me, of course, you know, this 9/11 was such a cinematic attack. And if we had done that in the siege, it would have been too Hollywood. You know, it was way
wouldn't
over the top.
Yeah. Right.
But the sequel, the things that happened after the attack, the rounding up of Arabs, the army in the streets of New York, and then, of course, the torture, all of those things were plot points that I watched those things unfold, you know, like I was turning pages of my script. And it was very unsettling to see what was down the road because everything was unfolding just as we had expected.
You've been a teacher, journalist, a screenwriter, and then at some point you decided to turn this into what turned into an off-Broadway play,
mm-hmm.
and now this documentary version of the off-Broadway play that's on HBO tonight. How did you decide to turn this into a play?
Well, years ago, I saw Anna Deavere Smith do Fires in the Mirror at the Public Theater, and it was a very galvanizing experience for me because I love theater. I'd written some plays, and I am a journalist, but I never thought you could marry the two and create this kind of nonfiction theater. And then David Hare, the distinguished British playwright, was writing his one-man show about Jerusalem, Stations of the Cross, and he asked if he could use a line that I'd written about Jerusalem in The New Yorker, which he wound up not using. But it once again, it got me thinking, that's very intriguing to me. So after the book came out, my buddy at The New Yorker, John Lahr, who's their theater critic, and I were talking, and he asked me what I wanted to do. And I said, honestly, John, I want to write a musical comedy. I'm sort of sick of...
Just to relieve the pressure.
Yeah, it's a terrorist. But I don't know how to go about doing it. And he said, well, you know, I'll call Andre Bishop at the Lincoln Center, and Andre will commission it for you. And, of course, Andre hadn't been let in on this, and he was a little dismayed. But when I told him that I had this other idea of maybe doing a one-man show, he said, well, that's where your energy is. You should do that.
We should say there's no singing or dancing in your one-man show.
No, not yet, anyway. I promise you that'll never happen.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate, talking to Lawrence Wright. His Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Looming Tower, has been turned into a one-man play, which is now a documentary on HBO. It's called My Trip to Al-Qaeda. Let's get into your trip there. You actually befriended Osama bin Laden's brother-in-law in your travels. You talk about this in both iterations of your play and documentary, Jamal Khalifa. Tell us about him.
Jamal Khalifa was a delightful guy. I was not quite prepared for the nature of the relationship that we came to have. I needed his help. He was Osama bin Laden's best friend, and he was married to Osama's favorite sister, Sheikha. So I went to talk to him. He turned out to be a remarkable source. Just you, as a reporter, when you find a source that knows that much and is as willing as he became to share it, you know, you go back again and again, and I talked to him dozens and dozens of times, and we got to be friends over the course of that time. At times that was a little unsettling to me because being friends with Jamal, which was easy to do because he had such a great wit, he was, you know, had a light spirit and all that, I could see what those qualities had drawn bin Laden to, you know, and I realized that there was a kind of kinship between the two of us, between over Jamal Khalifa. And Jamal was murdered a couple of years ago in Madagascar. No one's ever been arrested for his murder. It was supposedly a robbery, but all they took were his laptops. As his family holds the U.S. Special Forces to blame for that, and I have no proof of it. But there was a lot of misinformation in the intelligence community because he was close to bin Laden, because he was related to him. They assumed that he was in al-Qaeda, and I don't think that was true.
As an American, how did you trust him, and how did he trust you?
Well, trust is a real issue when you're writing a book that involves terrorists and intelligence agents, each of which has a native ability to lie and misrepresent the truth. My strategy is just the ordinary reporter strategy of talking to as many people as you can. And in the course of writing The Looming Tower, I talked to about 600 people. And then when you find those critically great sources whose information tends to check out, you go back to them. And if there's something that someone else has contradicted, you ask them about that and see if they have a good explanation. You know, testimony, legal testimony is good. Any kind of tapes or, you know, things that come from the on-the-ground sort of work you refer to, that's all useful. So the mass of material, you try to pull a skein through it. And the stuff that the story that sticks together is the one that is closest to being the truth.
I'd like to talk about the way you talk about the culture there in dealing with children, and I don't want to give away too many laugh lines, but you make the point humorously that there would be less terror if women and girlfriends just had more influence there. Is that the real key in dealing both with women and even children and getting them more elevated in the society?
Well, let's not lump all Arab or Muslim countries together. They're very different. But what we're talking about here is Saudi Arabia, where, first of all, they wouldn't let me into Saudi Arabia as a journalist. So I had to take a job. And I got this great job mentoring young journalists at this newspaper in Jeddah, which is Osama bin Laden's hometown. And I had all these young reporters teaching me much more about their culture than I could ever have learned as a journalist. But one of the things I learned in supervising these young male and female reporters is how the men have not been raised in the company of women. I mean, they see their mother and their sister, but essentially they're parallel societies that rarely intersect. And they haven't grown up learning how to please women, which is a lot of what civilization really is. It's vital, and it takes a toll on the women, and it takes a toll on the men. Just tell a story about one of my female reporters, Najla. She had an appointment in Riyadh one morning before the first airplane arrived, and so she had to fly in the night before. Well, in order to travel at all, as a single woman in Saudi Arabia, she needed the permission, written permission, of her male guardian. And that could be her father or her brother, even her son, whoever is the male in charge. And so she got the permission. She flew into Riyadh. As a single Saudi woman, she couldn't stay by herself in a hotel. So she sits down in the airport. And it closes at 11 o'clock, so the guard comes by and says, "You can't stay here." And she said, "Well, what are you going to do with me?" And bear in mind, this is a Saudi woman completely covered up. All you see on her gold-rimmed cat's-eye glasses. And so what could he do? He let her sleep on the floor of the mosque in the airport, turned out the lights, and she spent the night in the airport by herself. And the next morning, lights come on, and she goes to her appointment. And that's what it's like for a woman in Saudi Arabia. But it takes a toll on the men, too. You know, they don't have the experience of being comforted and tamed that the way that women can. It's just not easy to be a terrorist if your girlfriend won't let you.
Is there change there afoot at all, or is this the way it is and we need to learn to understand that?
No, Saudi Arabia is changing, but it changes in its own way. We look at Saudi Arabia now and think about how glacially it is moving. But if you consider what an impoverished society it was before the 40s, say, when oil really became a predominant economic factor there, people, you know, insects formed a large part of the protein diet, and it was just incredibly poor. And then within the space of 30 years, you have people living in Monaco and, you know, riding around in Ferraris. It was, you know, just from a very tribal society to going to that kind of affluence and presence on the world stage. It was head-snapping change. But since then, there has been a tremendous break on change. And I think that maybe Saudi Arabia had as much change as it could accommodate for a while. I actually believe that King Abdullah is doing a good job of trying to introduce civil society into that country, but it's slow.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate. My guest is Lawrence Wright. His Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Looming Tower, has been augmented and turned into this one-man show that he's done and turned into a documentary of the same name, which premieres tonight on HBO. It's called My Trip to Al-Qaeda. You spent some time talking about the Quran. It states explicitly, do not kill yourself.
Right.
How do jihadists defend suicide bombings then?
Well, actually, the chief defender is Ayman al-Zawahiri, the number two guy in al-Qaeda, and he actually pioneered this. When he was the head of this terrorist organization in Egypt called al-Jihad, which he started, by the way, when he was 15 years old, if you take that in for a moment. Even before suicide bombings became manifest in the Palestinian territories, he began suicide bombs in Cairo, trying to kill the prime minister and other officials in Egyptian government. And when he blew up the Islamabad embassy for the Egyptian government in 1996, he killed a lot of Muslims, and many of his followers were upset with him. And he explained it, that this is an unbalanced war, and you need to use every resource that you can. And this is not actually a suicide. It's an act of martyrdom. And he referenced, actually, the martyrs of Christianity because he couldn't cite any particular examples in Islam. So it's that kind of sophistry that has led many, many young Muslims to their death.
If I could, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems the real point of your play and the documentary is that a lot of what we're doing to fight terrorism is playing right into the terrorists' hands.
I'm sorry to say this so, Elliot. It's tragic to watch some of these events unfold. Bin Laden did have a strategy when he attacked America. He wanted us to be drawn into Afghanistan the way the Soviet Union had been. As you remember, in 1979, when the Soviets went in, they spent 10 years bleeding in Afghan soil, and then they pulled out in 1989. And what happened? The Soviet Union fell apart. And bin Laden actually believed that the United States would replicate that same mistake and become the dis-United States. Well, he miscalculated. I mean, it just took a couple of hundred special forces and CIA agents and the Northern Alliance and our air power to sweep aside the Taliban and pummel al-Qaeda. And really, the war on terror was dead. In November, December of 2001, al-Qaeda was dispersed. It was impoverished. It was repudiated all over the world. But then we invaded Iraq, and we gave them a whole new training ground. And the idea of al-Qaeda being engaged in is trying to promote the idea that America is in war with Islam. And in many respects, we are playing out on that script by continuing to be involved in Iraq, by conducting a new campaign in Yemen, and now at home we're having very intemperate controversies about the role of Islam in our own culture, which we've escaped up until now. Europe has been beset by these kinds of controversies. And I think this is going to do us a lot of damage. And bin Laden must be jumping up and down with glee.
I thought of you this morning when many of the news reports were talking about this church in Florida. I don't know whether you heard the news, but yeah. they're planning on burning the Quran
right
on 9/11.
Yeah,
this is part of that same thinking, right? That
right.
Playing and, right into the terrorists' hands.
And, you know, it takes we'll pay a toll for that. That's a needless gesture of insult. And General Petraeus said, you know, that it'll place American lives in danger. And I completely believe that. It's hard for me to stomach. I'm angry about it. And, I wish those people would change their minds, but sometimes the yahoos are in control of the parade and you can't do very much but watch it go by.
We've only got a minute or so left. You've got a new show, a new play that you're doing. You seem to like this form.
Had you ever
been an actor before?
No. I was in Oklahoma in high school musical. So
that counts.
It's an interesting experience for me because it's this new play is about Israel and Gaza, and it's called The Human Scale, and the Public Theater is putting it on at 3LD, a theater in downtown. I think this is a – at once it's a new form – because it's, you know, I call it nonfiction theater. But on the other hand, I think it's a very old thing, which is, how did journalism begin? You know, you imagine a people sitting around a campfire. Somebody goes over the hill and sees what's over there, and he comes back to the campfire and he reports. Well, when I'm standing on the stage and I can just barely see people's faces out there and their eyeglasses glinting and so on, it feels a little like, you know, being the original reporter.
And it's a pleasure to have you around this campfire as well.
Thank you, Elliot.
Nice to meet you. I've been speaking with Lawrence Wright. The film adaptation of his one-man show, My Trip to Al-Qaeda, premieres tonight at 9 o'clock on HBO. For more information, you can visit our show page at WNYC.org. Lawrence, thank you so much for being here, and best of luck in all your adventures.
Thank you so much, Elliot.